There was no room in any of the hotels, nor in any of the rooming houses, and it was late in the day.
We'll sleep in the livery up in the loft. Tomorrow we'll have our baths.
When do we get something to eat? I'm hungry.
Right now, if you're that hungry.
I am.
The men found a cafe and had supper. Beef, beans, potatoes, bread, and a piece of pie. Frank got a big sack full of scraps for Wolf.
I feel better.
You should feel terrible. You ate enough for two people.
excuse me.
On the way back to the livery, the men encountered the marshal walking the boardwalk. The marshal paused and looked hard at Frank for a long moment. Frank watched the man's face tighten and his eyes narrow as he recognized him.
Evening, Marshal.
The man nodded his head, still not quite sure he was looking at the legendary gun handler. Frank gave the sack of scraps to Jeff.
Feed Wolf, will you, Jeff? I'll be along in a few minutes.
Sure. I want to pull off my boots and wriggle my toes for a while anyway.
Frank pulled out the Makins and rolled a smoke, and then offered the sack and papers to the marshal.
Smoke, Marshal?
Don't mind if I do. Are my eyes playing tricks on me? Are you really Frank Morgan?
In person.
Damn.
Pleasant evening to you too, Marshal. Not here to cause any trouble.
I'm sure you've heard this before, Morgan. Trouble follows you.
I've heard it a time or two.
The marshal popped a match into flame, lit his cigarette, and waited.
Marshal, met up with a young fella wandering around on the trail. He's from New York City, first time out here. Was lost as a goose. I told him he could ride along with me. That's all there is to my being here.
I believe you, Morgan, but it still puts you here. You know, I reckon, about the bounty on your head.
I know.
$15,000 is a lot of money.
For a fact.
This town is full of trouble hunters. When the word gets around you are here, and it will real quick, there'll be men looking to call you out, and not just for the bounty.
I know it.
But you're still gonna stay here in Durango?
I am.
I figured you'd say that. How long are you gonna be in town, Morgan?
Quite a spell.
I figured you'd say that, too. Well, I reckon I'd better tell the Undertaker to get ready for some business.
Not necessarily. I won't start any trouble.
But you won't back down from any either?
I'll do my very best to try to talk it down if possible. But I won't back down from any man. Never have, never will.
That's about all I can hope for, I guess.
It's the best I can do.
All right, Morgan, I'll take your word for it. You seem like a straight shooter to me. Bad choice of words, wasn't it? Anyway, welcome to Durango.
He brushed by Frank and walked on down the boardwalk.
Seems like a nice enough fella.
Frank looked across the busy street and met the eyes of his son, Conrad. Frank lifted a hand in greeting. Conrad stared at him for a moment, then turned away without acknowledging the greeting in any way. The boy blamed Frank for getting his mother killed. Hopefully, he'd come around to thinking straight, or he wouldn't. Either way, Frank figured there wasn't a damn thing he could do about it. Frank felt eyes on him and looked down the street. The marshal was watching him. Frank held up a hand, signaling the marshal to wait, and walked down toward him.
Got a question for you, Marshal.
All right.
The Pine and Van Bergen gangs around?
I heard about that woman getting killed up north a few months back, and I also heard she was your ex-wife. Any truth in that?
Yeah.
Oh, brother. Word around town is that young uppity rich dude Conrad Browning is your son. Any truth in that?
Yeah. Although I'm sure it hurt Conrad's mouth to admit it.
I guess I understand that.
He didn't know until a few months ago.
Well, in answer to your question, yes. The Pine and Van Bergen gangs are around. But Vic and Ned never come into town. At least I've never seen either of them come in.
You can expect them to now.
Because of you?
Yeah.
The marshal frowned and then shrugged his shoulders.
You have any more good news you want to tell me?
Gangs might just be after Conrad, too.
Have you seen those bodyguards of his?
Two of them.
He has four big bruisers.
But they're not Western men.
The marshal gave that a few seconds thought.
No, they're not. I see what you mean.
They're not going to react the same.
No, probably not. Damn, I'll have to keep an eye on young Browning's girlfriend, too.
Conrad has a girlfriend?
Yes. She came to town a few days ago on the stage from back east somewhere. Two young people seem to hit it right off. Though, personally, I think Conrad is a stuck-up, fancy-pants little turd. She's a real pretty little thing. Colleen something or other.
Well, it certainly didn't take her long to find herself a beau.
Conrad has a good eye for the ladies.
The two men prepared for sleep on the hay in the loft of the livery.
Colleen sure is a pretty girl.
Go to sleep, Jeff. She isn't the only fish in the ocean. You'll feel better in the morning.
I suppose so. Have you ever seen the ocean, Frank?
What?
The ocean. Have you ever seen it?
Seen the Pacific Ocean a couple of times. It was beautiful.
Wolf padded softly through the thick hay, lay down between the two men, and curled up. Frank reached out and petted the animal. Wolf licked his hand and moved closer to him.
Oh, she sure is a pretty girl.
She'll be just as pretty in the morning, Jeff, after we get a good night's sleep.
Jeff didn't take the hint.
You've told me about your wife, Frank. Now tell me this, if you will.
Frank waited. And waited.
What is it, Jeff?
Was there ever another lady you cared for?
No.
You've been in love just the one time?
I reckon so, Jeff. There have been other women, yes, but they were just passing interests.
Ships that pass in the night.
I beg your pardon?
Longfellow.
Go to sleep, Jeff. Tomorrow's gonna be a very busy day.
Yes, of course. We have to find us a place to live, and I have to stake out some sort of claim, right?
That's right.
I'll put Colleen out of my mind.
I sure hope so. If you don't, it's gonna be a damn long night. What in the hell?
Frank grabbed for his pistol.
Is it the end of the world?
It's horrible!
What is it?
Paulette Tremaine done got religion and shut down her house!
Oh, no!
All the whores done quit, too! They all joined a church in the temperance movement.
You don't mean it.
I do. It's all the fault of that buffalo-butted woman from back east. That damn Martha Hornblower.
Hornblower?
Something like that. It's all her fault. She's leading the torchlight parade down Main Street. There's gonna be a big meeting right afterward.
This I gotta see. Come on.
Martha Overhauser.
The one and only.
Frank lay back down and pulled the blankets over him.
You don't want to go see?
Hell no. Someone's liable to take a shot at Martha. What's so funny?
If she was bent over, even I could hit her.
Well, she is mighty ample in the rear end for effect.
Jeff crawled to the loft door and looked out.
Whole bunch of ladies out there. And some men, too.
In the parade?
Yes.
Local ministers, I bet.
And there's Martha leading the pack.
Can you see Colleen?
Colleen? Why, she wouldn't be involved in something this silly.
Don't bet on it.
I think I'll go down and take a look.
You go right ahead. Me and Wolf will stay here. You can tell me all about it in the morning.
This is important, Frank.
Jeff pulled on his boots.
Not to me.
Well, I'll try not to wake you when I get back.
Have fun.
Frank snuggled deeper into the hay. Wolf moved closer to him. They both went back to sleep. When he woke early the next morning, Jeff was still gone. Frank dressed and got Wolf down from the loft. The temperature was below freezing. Frank figured it was in the mid-20s, but there was little wind, which helped a little. Frank checked his watch. 5 o'clock.
You stay here, Wolf.
Frank put him in an empty stall.
I'll bring you back something to eat.
Wolf yawned and went back to sleep. Frank walked over to a cafe just opening and ordered a pot of coffee and breakfast.
Yeah, big doings in town here last night, huh?
The waitress shook her head as she filled his cup.
Foolishness. Marshall arrested about 2 dozen people, men and women.
Did he now?
Frank wondered if Jeff was one of them.
Sure did. Amongst them was 2 preachers, that Overhauser woman and Paulette Tremaine. They're still in jail.
Frank ate his breakfast, drank his coffee, enjoyed the warmth of the cafe and the good food. The cafe began to fill up, and Frank stepped out into the cold. The lights were on at the marshal's office. Frank walked over and looked in the window. The marshal was seated at his desk, working on some papers. Frank tapped on the door, and the marshal let him in.
Morgan, you have a problem?
No, but my young partner might. You have a Jeff Barton locked up?
Indeed I do.
Damn. Figured as much. Disturbing the peace at the rally last night?
You got it. Most of those arrested have paid their fine and left. But several refused, and I had no choice but to keep them locked down.
Jeff Barton, Paulette Tremaine, and Martha Overhauser.
You got it square on the money, Morgan.
And a young gal named Colleen.
Colleen O'Brien. How'd you know that?
Met Colleen and Martha Overhauser at a stage stop. Jeff's been riding with me. He's sort of smitten with Colleen. Paulette and Martha are old school friends from back east.
Well, I'll be damned. Say, you wouldn't like to be my deputy for a while, would you?
Not a chance, Marshal. Can I see Jeff?
Oh, sure. I was just about to take him some coffee. Help me tote it?
Be glad to.
The front door opened and Conrad stepped in, dressed to the nines, from his polished low-quarter shoes to his funny-looking hat. He was frowning, and his frown turned to a scowl when he looked at Frank. Two big bruisers stepped in right behind him. Conrad's bodyguards would probably tip the scales at about 250 pounds each, both of them looking as if they'd been carved out of solid oak. Conrad did not speak to his father, just nodded and turned his attention to the marshal.
You have a young lady locked up, Marshal. A Miss Colleen O'Brien.
Indeed I do.
May I see her?
It's a little early, young man. Let me see if they're awake.
Very well. We'll wait.
Have a seat. Come on, Frank. You grab the cups. I'll tote the pot.
The marshal opened the cell block door.
The accommodations in this prison are abysmal. Primitive, to say the least.
Your mouth got you in here, lady. $10 will get you out.
Never! It's a matter of principle!
Suit yourself. How about some coffee, ladies?
I would like some, please.
Jeff avoided meeting Frank's eyes.
Me too!
Frank passed out the 10 cups and the marshal filled them.
I would like two sugars and a small bit of cream, please.
Black or not at all, lady.
You are a very rude and crude person, Marshal Dixon.
You're fine. Just went up to $20, Mrs. Overhauser.
Insensitive oaf!
Oh, my mistake, lady. I meant $30.
Oh!
Martha sat down on the bunk and shut her mouth.
Colleen, I'm very disappointed in you.
Get your butt back in the waiting area, boy.
Don't you speak to me in such a manner, Marshal Dixon.
I'll speak to you in any damn way I feel like, boy. Now you get back into the waiting area and you stay there. Move, boy, or I'll put your ass in a cell.
Conrad opened his mouth.
Put a sock in it, son. Get out of here.
Conrad spun around and stalked out of the cell area, his back stiff as a poker.
How much is Jeff's fine, Marshal?
$10.
I have the money to pay my fine, if I choose to do so. But I've done nothing wrong.
Shut up.
Frank looked at Marshal Dixon.
What's he charged with?
There are about a dozen things I could hang on him and Miss O'Brien. But if they'll pay just $10 each, I'll only charge him with creating a public nuisance.
That's on the books?
It is now.
Frank handed the Marshal $20.
That's for Jeff and the girl. The other two are on their own.
Stand firm, Colleen! Don't yield to pressures from a man!
How about me?
I ought to send you to the territorial prison, Paulette. You're long overdue in my book.
Try it, you officious pissant! I know the judge, in more ways than one.
I'll bet you know him more ways than one, you and your ladies or whatever the hell you call them.
Dixon opened the cell door and jerked Jeff out, then opened another door and hauled Colleen out.
The two of you get out of here. Move!
You and I will talk later on today, Colleen. Your behavior last night was quite disgraceful. I'm very ashamed of you.
I thought she was wonderful, standing up for her beliefs.
Who asked you for your opinion?
Conrad looked at Jeff the way a doctor might look at a germ.
You vagabond?
Boy does have a way with words, doesn't he?
Before Frank could reply, Jeff took a step toward Conrad, his hands balled into fists.
You pompous little tyrant. You need a good thrashing.
Try it, you misbegotten sot.
Frank was looking on, amused at the exchange. Conrad's bodyguards, however, were not amused. They moved closer to Conrad, ready to protect their boss. Frank turned to the pair of bruisers.
You boys stand easy.
Or you'll do what?
Put more holes in your head than you can count.
Frank pushed back his coat and slipped the thong off the hammer of his .45.
He's a craven killer. He means it.
A craven killer?
Jeff looked first at Conrad, then at Frank.
That's a damn lie! He's no craven killer!
Are you calling me a liar? You worthless bum!
Yes, I'm calling you a liar. I'm also calling you an arrogant, two-bit, petty little spoiled brat. What do you think about that, fancy pants?
I've got a good mind to give you a proper thrashing.
All by yourself, or with the help of your hired thugs?
Hey, I ain't no thug. Where the hell you get off calling me a thug?
Me neither. That's a damn insult I don't have to take.
I don't need any help.
Conrad removed his coat.
I boxed in school, and I am quite skilled in the art of pugilism.
Frank, what the hell does that mean?
Means he thinks he knows how to fight.
Jeff took off his coat and balled his hands into fists.
Stop this!
Stay out of this, dear.
Dear? How dare you call my girl dear?
I'm quite flattered, Conrad, and I am not your girl.
You cheap little slut.
That does it! No!
The fight was on.
You broke my nose. I'll break more than that.
Conrad kicked out, and his shoe caught Jeff on the knee.
Oh, son of a bitch, you little weasel! Damn that smarts!
Conrad got to his feet, his nose bloody. He set himself in his best prizefighter pose. Left arm fully extended in front of him, right hand held close to his chest, both hands balled into fists.
Is he gonna fight or pose for a statue?
Damned if I know.
Jeff carefully tested his knee, found that it worked, and faced Conrad.
Now you get thrashed.
Conrad's reply was to pop Jeff on the jaw. The blow staggered him back. Jeff recovered and gave Conrad a left shot to the belly and a right fist to the side of the head. The two then stood toe to toe, slugging it out, each giving back as much as he got.
Pretty damn good fight.
Oh, stop this!
The men paid no attention to her.
Time! Time!
My ass!
Jeff knocked him to the floor.
Oh! Foul! Foul!
That ain't fair! That was an uncalled for blow!
This ain't no prize ring, boys.
Conrad jumped to his shoes and popped Jeff on the nose.
Ouch!
Conrad gave him a left and right to the belly.
Yeah, give it to him, Mr. Browning.
I can't stand this!
You can leave, miss.
Colleen looked at Frank.
Stop this!
They're fighting over you, Colleen, not me.
Jeff hauled off and knocked Conrad through the office window. Conrad landed on his butt on the boardwalk. Jeff crawled through the broken window after him.
Whoever wins the fight gets to pay for that broken window.
Sounds fair to me.
Conrad and Jeff were slugging it out on the boardwalk. Colleen was screaming. Martha and Paulette were hollering back in the cell area. And a crowd had gathered in the street to watch the fight in front of the marshal's office. Frank and Marshal Dixon stepped outside to watch the fight, the bodyguards with them. All in all, it was a typical day in the mining town of Durango.
You unwashed lout! I'll teach you a lesson!
How will you teach me anything once I shove your head up your ass?
Conrad and Jeff rolled off the boardwalk and into the muddy street, still cussing and flailing away at each other, but doing little damage.
I think they've just about had it.
Here's our way to me.
Jeff and Conrad staggered to their feet, glaring at one another.
That's it, boys. Fight's over.
Conrad reared back and took a swing at Jeff, who ducked. The punch caught the marshal flush in the mouth. Dixon's feet flew out from under him, and he landed on his butt in the mud. Conrad's feet slipped in the mud, and he began flailing his arms, trying to keep his balance. He didn't make it. He fell heavily into Jeff, and they went down together in a mud puddle in front of a horse trough.
Good Lord.
Get me out of here!
Somebody get this crazy crackpot off me!
Crazy crackpot? Why, you worthless saddle tramp, you...
He never got a chance to finish it. Jeff popped him on the nose again.
You don't fight fair. My nose is really broken now.
I'll make sure.
Conrad jumped up, both hands holding his busted beak. Frank decided it had gone far enough. He waded in and grabbed Conrad, slinging him into the arms of his bodyguard.
Hold on to him and don't turn him loose.
He reached down and jerked Jeff to his boots.
Huh?
It's over, damn it. Now calm down.
He gave Jeff a shove that propelled him into the base of the horse trough. Jeff did a belly flop into the icy water. Frank looked at the bodyguards.
Get your boss out of here right now.
He hauled Jeff out of the horse trough and shoved him toward the barbershop.
Get over there and tell the barber to start heating up some hot water. I'll bring your clothes over.
Who won the fight?
I'd call it a draw.
Frank paid for the broken window. Then he got Wolf something to eat from a cafe and saddled his horse. He got Jeff some clean clothes and took them over to the bathhouse and waited until Jeff finished his bath and dressed.
Go on back to the livery and take care of Wolf until I get back. Can you do that without getting into a brawl?
Yes, Frank.
Good. I should be back by mid-afternoon or sooner. Now go on.
Where are you going?
Find us a place to stay.
How's Conrad?
Probably madder than hell.
How's Colleen?
I have no idea. Now go on back to the livery, and by God, stay there.
Frank headed out of town with no plan to look for a place to stay. He had already found one owned by the marshal and paid several months' rent on the place. No, he wanted to check out the country on his own, and he wanted to see if anyone followed him. As he rode, Frank smiled, thinking about the fight. Conrad was sure as hell no sissy boy. He was a pretty good puncher and wasn't afraid to wade right in and mix it up. Now, if the boy would just get rid of that damn silly hat. Frank rode for several hours, noticing no signs of a tail. The Pine and Van Bergen gangs either did not yet know he was in the area or didn't care. Probably they didn't know. But they would, he was certain of that. Both Ned and Vic wanted him dead. Frank headed back to town, arriving at mid-afternoon. The weather was turning sour, the skies thick with low gray clouds, promising a blanket of snow before morning. Jeff was in the loft of the livery, rolled up in his blankets. Wolf was snuggled up next to him in the hay.
To have us a place to live, Jeff. Let's get moved in. Rattle your hocks.
I feel really terrible. I think I'm coming down with something.
You probably are. Move!
The two-bedroom house Frank rented was well-built and furnished with a small barn out back. Frank sent Jeff to the general store to buy bedding and a few pots and pans, a coffee pot, and a few basic supplies. Frank built a fire in the Franklin stove and in the stove in the kitchen, then primed the kitchen pump and got it working. Wolf carefully inspected each room in the house. After circling the spot a dozen times, he apparently found himself a place to bed down in the small living room.
We'll spend the winter here, boy, I hope.
I broke your boy's nose and gave him a fat lip.
Frank looked at Jeff's face. It was bruised, and Jeff was sporting a shiner.
You both got marked. Did you see Colleen in town?
Yes, she found a job working for the local paper.
As a reporter?
Sort of. She's quite thrilled about it. We're going to a social tomorrow evening.
Oh?
Yes. Conrad apparently wants no more to do with her. I'm told he's sworn off women forever.
Yeah, that'll last for at least a day or two. Are you feeling better?
Yes, much better. I just have a small head cold, but I'm very tired for some reason.
Eat a good supper, then go to bed. I'll fix us some bacon and eggs.
That sounds wonderful.
Long after Jeff went to bed and was sleeping soundly, Frank sat in the small living room, the lamp turned down low, drinking coffee, wondering what his next move should be. The fire of revenge that had raged in his belly for weeks after he found his cabin destroyed and Wolf shot was a smoldering ember. What the hell would be the point of long, exhausting weeks on the trail, through the bitter cold and blowing snow, to gun down a pack of worthless men the law would catch and hang sooner or later? No point at all.
Oh, hell with it. Durango is as good a place as any to hold up for the winter. I sure don't have to worry about money.
Wolf padded over to him and Frank petted the animal.
Maybe we can stay put here for a few months, boy. Would you like that? It's settled then. We'll stay here for a while.
During the next several weeks, Jeff staked out a claim, and actually began to look like a man who spent more time outside than in an office. Paulette Tremaine's soiled doves went back to work, doing what they did best, freelancing in the town's many saloons. Paulette and Martha founded the Durango Christian Temperance and Women's Rights League and proceeded to make a nuisance of themselves.
Strong women against strong spirits!
Jeff and Colleen saw each other on a regular basis.
Oh.
Love appeared to be in full bloom. Frank figured they'd get hitched up come spring. Conrad kept pretty much to himself. When he and Frank saw each other, the young man chose not to acknowledge his presence. Frank didn't push the issue. Christmas and New Year's came and went. The weather turned lousy, with lots of snow and bitterly cold temperatures. Frank kept busy chopping wood and hauling it back to town with a wagon and team rented from the livery. Wolf stayed inside mostly and put on weight. February drifted into March, and the weather began to moderate.
We hit the trail come spring, boy. You're gonna lose some of that fat.
Wolf wagged his tail and looked at his empty food bowl.
Later, you're getting fat. Why don't you go catch a rabbit?
Wolf looked at him as though he had lost his mind and wandered back to his bed for a nap. Frank got up to pour himself a cup of coffee.
Huh. Too quiet for the past couple of months. Something real bad is fixing to happen. I can feel it. Hope I'm wrong. I don't think I am.
Frank opened the front door and looked into the worried face of Marshal Dixon. He waved him inside.
I was just thinking it was too damn quiet and something was due to happen. I reckon it has.
It has, Frank. Conrad Browning's been kidnapped. Conrad stepped out for lunch and never returned. The two bodyguards with him were found in a shed behind the cafe, their throats cut. The other two bodyguards disappeared without a trace. A blood-stained note was found, stuck to the chest of one of the dead bodyguards with a knife. The note demanded $1 million for Conrad's safe return. If the money was not paid, the young man would die.
Frank stared for a moment in disbelief at the marshal.
$1 million?
That's what the note said.
Can't even imagine $1 million.
I can't either. When it gets past a couple of thousand, my brain gets boggled.
Who signed the note?
Dixon handed the bloodstained note to Frank. It was unsigned.
This is it?
That's it. Now you know as much as I do.
No instructions?
None.
Frank handed the note back to the marshal.
The two missing bodyguards?
Well, for sure, they had something to do with it. But there were at least half a dozen boot prints back at the cafe and bloody boot heels in the shed.
Pine and Van Bergen.
That's my thinking.
You know their hideout, Marshal?
No. I honest to God do not. I've talked with other lawmen who say it changes from time to time. From the canyon country badlands west of here to the mountains north of here. Take your pick.
Have you ever chased them?
They've never committed a crime in this town. At least not to my knowledge. And I don't know a damn thing about the badlands.
Do me a favor?
Sure, name it.
Find Jeff and tell him to look after Wolf. We're going to gear up and try to pick up the trail.
If he can't look after him, I promise you I will. I'll take good care of him. You have my word. I like that mutt.
Frank packed quickly but carefully and saddled up, then rigged the pack saddle on his pack horse. Then he filled up Wolf's water bowl and food dish.
Now you be good and mind people, you hear me?
Wolf looked up from his food dish and wagged his tail, then resumed his dining. Frank rode into town and provisioned up. While the shopkeeper was filling his order, Frank checked the tracks in back of the cafe and found a couple of distinctive horseshoe prints. One shoe had a peculiar marking, and one of the horses put down his right front hoof in an odd way.
Now I can follow you to hell, boys.
He was back in the saddle in half an hour following the tracks. They led straight north.
Better than heading down into Ute country.
Though there was not much fight left in the Utes now. There was still snow on the ground in many places. The snow made tracking a lot easier. The kidnappers were following an old Indian trail Frank felt sure was originally a game trail. The stage road was a few miles to Frank's east, but those few miles were over some rugged and inhospitable terrain. The day was bright with sunshine, and the temperature, Frank thought, was probably in the mid-40 range. The snow was melting quickly in the lower elevations. The nights were still well below freezing, usually in the mid-20s. The kidnappers had several hours' jump on Frank. He was pretty sure the outlaws hid fresh horses along the way. There was no way he could catch up to them without killing his horses, something he would not do. A half day's hard ride north of Durango, the trail abruptly turned west. Frank rested his horses while he inspected the trail side on foot. After casting around for several minutes, he discovered half of the outlaws continued on north, the other half west.
Damn.
He had no way of knowing which group held his son captive. Either way was rough country, but north was slightly worse and colder.
West, and I hope I'm right.
Frank spent an uncomfortable night on the trail, the first of what would turn out to be many. During the cold night, Frank awakened often to add wood to the small fire and to think. He didn't believe his son was kidnapped solely for ransom. $1 million was totally unrealistic. He believed, in part, Conrad was taken to pull Frank out of Durango. Ned Pine and Victor Van Bergen grabbed Conrad, knowing Frank would follow and they could kill him, or try to kill him. But if that was the case, then why did the trail suddenly split? Just maybe, Frank thought, the bodyguards in cahoots with the Pine and Van Bergen gangs got paid off and sent on their way. Lingering over coffee at his nooning, Frank decided that was it. He knew Pine and Van Bergen hated him to their cores. He knew both of them swore to kill him many times. He suspected they had killed Vivian, not just for the money Dutton surely paid them, but to get at him.
Sorry, bastards.
Frank poured another cup of coffee and munched on hard crackers.
Well, if you done this to get me on your trail, boys, you damn sure succeeded.
Frank's horses suddenly became alert, their heads coming up, ears pricked in attention. Frank dropped his coffee cup and threw himself to one side. Rifle in hand, Frank rolled toward a fallen log and hunkered down behind the small protection. Frank was sure the shots came from one man, off to his left in a thicket of brush. He held his fire, wanting the sniper to expose himself. Frank waited, but no more shots came. A few minutes ticked past. Frank rolled from behind the protection of the log into the brush. No shots followed him. He slipped deeper into the brush and then into the timber, carefully working his way toward the thicket. He heard a slight noise and paused, listening intently. The faint sounds of a horse moving away reached him. Frank ran toward the fading sound, hoping to get in at least one shot. He was too late. The unknown sniper got away. He knelt down and inspected the hoof tracks. He could not tell if they were part of the group that left the tracks behind the cafe in town. It was still a mystery as to whether or not he was following the group holding his son. But he now suspected more than ever that he was. Frank mounted up and rode on. Before he went a mile, he came across the fresh tracks of his ambusher. The man had swung back onto the trail, traveling as fast as he could over the rough terrain. Frank had to give this situation some thought. The ambusher knew he was following, and also knew he wasn't going to stop following. That made Frank a very conspicuous target. What to do about that? He couldn't leave the trail. If he did, it might take him hours or days to pick it up. He might never pick it up. Frank shucked his rifle out of the saddle scabbard and started on, his rifle held in one hand across the saddle horn. He would ride a few hundred yards, then rein up and carefully check out all in front and behind him. It slowed him down, but helped keep him alive. He moved on another half a mile, he reckoned, and abruptly stopped when he saw where the sniper had reined up and sat his horse for a time. Frank carefully scanned the terrain in front of him, his gaze always returning to one spot about 500 yards in front of him and slightly to his right.
Right there is where I'd choose for an ambush. Perfect cover and elevation. I bet that's where the son of a bitch is.
Frank stepped his horse off the trail and into deeper timber. He ground-reined both animals and took off his spurs. Then he set out on foot, swinging wide so he could come up behind the ambusher. He hoped. As he drew ever closer, Frank caught the faint odor of tobacco. The man had built him a smoke while waiting, probably trying to steady his nerves for the kill. Frank was much more cautious now, for while he knew approximately where the shooter was, he wasn't sure of the exact spot. He could be anywhere along that ridge, in the brush and timber. From the sound of the rifle, he definitely wasn't shooting a .44 or a .44-40. Probably one of those fancy new bolt-action rifles with maybe one of those high-powered telescope things on it. That type of rifle would have a much more accurate range to it than Frank's .44-40. Definitely something to take into consideration. Shortly after he swung in behind the ridge and started working his way up, Frank caught a flash of color, a color that was out of place in the brush and timber.
There you are.
Frank had a shot, but chose not to take it. He wanted the ambusher alive, if possible, to answer some questions. Frank began slowly and furtively working his way up the ridge, utilizing every bit of cover. The ambusher came into clear view and never looked around to check behind him. Frank reached a spot about 25 yards behind the man with a clear shot of the fellow spun around and tried to shoot.
Don't move, partner. Don't do anything stupid or you're dead.
The man froze in place.
Morgan?
That's right.
Damn! Are you part engine?
No, just a man who stays alive by being real careful.
I believe it!
Lay the rifle down, slow.
The man carefully laid his expensive-looking rifle with a telescope sight on it on the ground.
Stand up and turn around. Do it real careful, no sudden moves.
The ambusher stood up slowly. He didn't turn around.
Are you gonna kill me, Morgan?
Not unless I have to.
I don't believe you.
Your choice, live or die, it's all up to you.
The man stood with his back to Frank, his hands at his side. He refused to turn around.
You're putting me on the spot, fella. You're playing a dangerous game.
What difference does it make? It's the only game in town.
For a fact.
I hear you're a fast gun, Morgan.
Fast doesn't have anything to do with this situation. I got a rifle pointed square at you.
Well now, if that's the case, I reckon that's true. I got me an idea. You wouldn't want to put that rifle down and let you and me go head-to-head at it, would you, Morgan? Just to see who's the fastest?
Why should I? I got nothing to prove, partner.
Don't interest you at all, huh, Morgan?
Not in the least.
Pity, since I think you've slowed down. Man gets to be your age, he loses a lot, including his nerve.
A man gets to be my age, he can tell a foolish idea when he hears one, partner.
You're a cool one, Morgan. But I think I have to try you anyway.
You truly are a fool.
Not the first time I've been called that.
It'll be the last.
Maybe.
The ambusher spun around, snaking his pistol from leather. Frank's bullet hit the ambusher in the shoulder and sat him down on the cold ground.
Damn! Ow!
That was a foolish move, partner.
Oh, you said I'm a fool! Oh.
He slowly lifted his six gun. Frank took careful aim with his rifle and put a bullet into the man's right arm. The pistol dropped from his fingers.
Damn!
You want to try for another bullet? Or for some conversation?
How about a doctor?
Can't help you there.
Oh, my shoulder's on fire.
Get used to it.
Oh, you trying to tell me I'm heading for the hellfires?
That's between you and whatever you call God.
I don't believe in none of that crap.
Your option.
Frank walked the distance between them and squatted down a few yards from the man.
You're not gonna make it, partner.
I know that, you son of a bitch.
You have a name?
Don't everybody? Charles Bowers.
Any kin?
No.
Where's your horse? I'll turn him loose.
Over yonder a ways. He's a good one. You ought to take him with you and sell him.
Only if you have a bill of sale.
Charles smiled.
That's what I figured. Where'd you steal him?
Didn't. Gang did somewheres. I don't rightly know where.
Pine and Van Bergen gangs?
Yeah.
What is this $1 million crap in return for Conrad Browning?
To get you to follow us and kill you.
And then what happens to Conrad?
He gets a bullet.
So Pine and Van Bergen never planned on collecting any ransom money?
Not a dime.
Where are they taking the boy?
West. Into the Badlands.
Into Ute country?
No, just north of there.
So I'm on the right track. Following the right bunch.
Yeah, why lie about it now?
How much of what you're telling me is the truth?
You figure it out, Drifter.
To hell with you, then. Die alone.
Where are you going?
Leaving.
You can just go to ride off and leave me here for the critters to eat on?
That's about it.
That ain't decent.
Neither are you.
All right, all right.
All right, what?
Sit back down. I'll tell you everything I know. You're a sneaky bastard, Morgan.
Charles Bowers lay in a patch of snow, his shoulder painting crimson over the white canvas.
Nobody ever snuck up on me like that before.
There's first times for everything. Tell me where they took my boy and who has him. The trail split a few miles back and I need to know what tracks to follow. Where the hell are they taking my son? Don't lie to me or I'll find you and tie you down to make sure the critters get an easy meal.
Jesus, Morgan! Ned and his bunch have got him.
Where's Van Bergen?
They turned toward the river to throw off any pursuit if you or some posse from Durango was getting too close. Ned's being real careful about this, and so's Van Bergen. They know about your whole reputation.
Conrad's with Pine?
Yeah. Sam and Buster and Josh, too. And Mac and Curtis are riding rear guard. Arnie and Scott rode on ahead to get the cabin ready. Oh, they figured you'd be behind them all the way once you picked up their trail. Hell, they're expecting you to show up.
The cabin? What cabin?
It's an old hideout. Sits beside Stump Creek at the edge of the Badlands, way back in a box canyon. Ned's going to send somebody back to Durango to tell you where the ransom money is supposed to be dropped off.
Ned Pine's got to be crazy. He knows I don't have that kind of money. Hell, all I'm going to do is kill him and every one of his sidekicks.
It ain't going to be as easy as you make it sound. They don't figure you've got big money. All Ned and Victor aim to do is kill you when you show up. They've got grudges against you from way back, and they won't rest easy till you're dead. Like I told you, it ain't gonna be easy getting close to them. They're gonna be ready for you.
Depends.
Depends on what?
On how mad I am when I get to that cabin.
Ah, there's too many of them, Morgan. One of them will get you before you reach the kid. Ned Pine's about as good with a gun as any man I ever saw. He's liable to kill you himself if the others don't forehand.
I wish him all the luck. I've been trying to quit the gunfighter's trade for several years. Then some bastard comes along like Ned Pine or Vic Van Bergen, and they won't let it rest. But I can promise you one thing.
What's that, Morgan?
Frank stared off at graying skies, holding a promise of evening snow. A winter squall headed into the mountains. Frank glared down at Bowers.
I'll kill every last one of them. I've been getting some practice lately, and I can damn sure take down Ned Pine and his boys. One at a time, maybe, but I'll damn sure do it. Van Bergen don't worry me at all. He's yellow. He won't face me with a gun.
Everybody says the Drifter's past his prime, Morgan. I've heard it for years. He got too old to make it in this profession, and folks know it.
Not too old to catch a fool like you. Ned Pine and his owl hoots can test me. We'll see if old age has caught up to me. We'll know when this business is finished. It depends on who walks away.
Oh, Ned claims you ain't got the nerve you used to have back when you made a name for yourself. Hell, that was more than 20 years ago, according to Ned.
I never met a man I was afraid of. Leastways, none yet.
You gonna leave me here to die?
Nope. I'm gonna take your guns and put you on that stolen stud. I'll tie your bandanas around your shoulder and arm so you don't lose too much blood. It'll be up to you to find your way out of these mountains and canyons. I'm giving you a 50-50 chance to make it out of here alive. It's better odds than I aim to give you.
But I'm hurting real bad. I don't know if I can sit a saddle.
Frank shrugged, standing up with the ambusher's rifle cradled in his arm.
Better than being dead, son. I'll fetch your horse and help you into the saddle.
Oh, but Durango's 50 miles from here, across rough country to boot.
Frank halted on his way into the trees.
I can put you out of your misery now if that's what you'd prefer. Slug right between the eyes and you won't feel a damn thing. You'll just go to sleep.
You'd murder a man in cold blood.
Wasn't that what you were trying to do to me? Anyway, I'd prefer to call my shot an act of mercy.
Bowers laid his head back against a rotted tree trunk.
I reckon I'm obliged for what you're gonna do. I just ain't all that sure I'm gonna make it to town.
Life don't have many guarantees, Bowers. You got one chance to make it. Stay in your saddle and aim for Durango. Otherwise, you're gonna be buzzard food. Hold on real tight to that saddle horn, and if you know how to pray, you might try a little of that, too.
He brought the bay stud back to the clearing. Bowers lay with his head on the rotten log, his shoulders surrounded by red snow.
Sit up, Bowers. I'm gonna tie off your wounds.
Oh, Jesus, my shoulder hurts. I don't think I can make it plumb to Durango.
Suit yourself. You can lie here and bleed to death, or you can sit that horse and test your luck riding out of these mountains.
You're cold-blooded, Morgan.
I'm supposed to stop looking for my son long enough to help a no-good son of a bitch who was trying to ambush me? You'd have left me for dead if you'd gotten off the first shot. Don't preach me any sermons about what a man's supposed to do.
I ain't gonna make it. I lost too much blood already.
Then just lie there and go to sleep. Won't take too long. First, you'll get real cold. Chills will set in. Then you won't be able to keep your eyes open. In an hour or two, you'll be done.
Damn, Morgan! You could take me to the closest doctor if you wanted.
I don't have the inclination, Bowers. You and the man you work for have taken my son. He's 18 years old. You want me to cough up a big ransom, more money than there is in the whole territory of Colorado, only you know I can't pay it? Ned Pine and the rest of you figured you'd lure me into a death trap. Only I got news for Ned. A death trap works two ways. The man who lays it can get killed just as easy as the prey he's trying to lure into it. Pine and Van Bergen are about to find out how it works.
You got any whiskey?
Sure do. Pint a good Kentucky sour mash. Only I ain't gonna waste any of it on you. It's gonna get cold tonight. Figure it's gonna snow. Whiskey I've got is gonna help me stay warm. I don't give a damn if you get froze stiff before you get back to Durango.
You ain't got no feelings, Morgan.
Not for trash like you. Nothing on earth worse than a damn bushwhacker.
It's what Ned told me to do.
Then ask Ned or Victor for some of their whiskey. Mine is staying in my saddlebags.
Oh, I ain't gonna make it plumb to Durango.
I'll notify your next of kin you tried as hard as you could.
Frank pulled off Bowers' bandanas.
Now sit up straight and pull off your coat so I can tie this around that shoulder as tight as I can.
Oh, it damn sure hurts.
Bowers slid his Mackinaw off his damaged arm.
A shame. Seems like they ought to make a slug that don't cause any pain when it takes a rotten bushwhacker down. No sense in hurting a dirty back shooter any more than it's absolutely necessary.
Frank hoisted Charles Bowers into the saddle, his Mackinaw covering the bandage he made for the shoulder wound. As the sun lowered in the west, spits of snow began to fall.
Tell me where I find Stump Creek, then direct me to the cabin.
Stump Creek is due west. Maybe 10 more miles across this bunch of ravines. When you get to the first creek, you swing north. Stump Creek winds right up in that canyon where the cabin is hid.
If there isn't any cabin or any creek, I'll come looking for you.
It's there. They're both there. When you get to the canyon, they'll have a guard or two posted high on them rock walls on either side. Watch your ass.
I always do. Now you best head for Durango. It'll take all you got to make the ride.
It's snowing, Morgan. How about just one sip of the sour mash?
I told you, I don't waste good whiskey on back shooters. Besides, you got leaks in you. Why let good whiskey spill on the ground?
You're a bastard, Morgan.
Maybe so, but I'm still alive. Unless you get to Durango by sunrise, the same can't be said for you. Keep that horse aimed southeast. Don't let go of the saddle horn. If you're as tough as you say you are, you'll make it.
And if I don't, what if I freeze to death?
You'll make a good meal for the coyotes and wolves. They're especially hungry this time of year. Now get riding.
How about giving me back my rifle? I may need it if the wolves get too close. They can smell blood.
No deal. You used it to take a shot at me. What's to keep you from trying it again?
You got my word, Morgan. All I'm trying to do is stay alive.
Then you'll have to do it without a gun. Heal that horse southeast.
Oh, I wish I'd killed you, Drifter.
Frank gave him a one-sided grin.
Plenty of men wish the same thing. But so far, Wishing just hasn't gotten it done.
Bowers drummed his heels into the bay stallion's sides as more snow pelted down on the clearing. Frank watched Bowers ride out of sight into the trees.
He might just make it.
Frank headed for his saddle horse and pack horse with Bowers' rifle in the crook of his arm. He needed to keep moving until dark, if the weather allowed, until he found Stump Creek. During the night, he would give the canyon and the cabin an examination, making plans for the way he would make his approach tomorrow morning. Snow began to fall in wind-blown sheets as he mounted his horse and wound the lead rope on his pack horse around his saddle horn. He turned northwest.
I'm coming, Pine. Hit him!
He tilted his hat brim to block the snow.
Conrad damn sure better be in good shape when I get there.
How many years since Frank Morgan last went on the prowl to kill a man, or several of them? He couldn't recall. He tried to put his killing days behind him.
Some sons of bitches just won't let it alone. Won't let it rest.
He bore no doubts he could kill Ned Pine or Victor Van Bergen and their gangs, though getting it done carefully would take time. The patter of snowflakes drummed on Frank's hat brim and coat. He thought about Conrad, hoping the boy was okay. A kid his age had no way to prepare for the likes of Pine and Van Bergen in these more modern times. Back when Frank was a boy, the country was full of them.
I'm on my way, son.
A wall of white fell in front of him.
Just hang on until I get there. I promise I'll make those bastards pay for what they've done to you.
He guided his horse up a snowy ridge, leading his pack horse. Frank's shoulders were hunched into the wind, the collar of his Mackinaw turned up, the brim of his hat pulled down against a building wall of snow.
Seems like the weather's turned against me.
But with Conrad's life on the line, no amount of hardship would turn him aside. The boy couldn't take care of himself against a trash gang of gunslingers.
Hell, he's only 18.
The wind and more snow pelted his words into silence. His first objective was to find the stream called Stump Creek, then ride north along its banks. If Bowers wasn't telling the truth about the outlaw gang's hideout, Frank would track him down and kill him. If the weather and a shoulder wound didn't get Bowers before he got to Durango. Crossing the ridge, Frank spotted an unexpected sight. An old mountain man leading a mule.
Seems harmless enough. Most likely an old trapper or grizzly hunter.
Most of the old-time mountain men were gone now. Times had changed. To be on the safe side, Frank opened his coat so he could reach for his Colt Peacemaker. His Winchester was booted to his saddle, just in case a fight started at longer range, though he didn't expect any such thing. The old man in deerskins was minding his own business, leading his mule west into the storm with his head lowered. The mountain man, wearing a coonskin cap, stopped and watched Frank ride toward him. The mountain man kept his right hand near a belted pistol at his waist. He was out in the open, dozens of yards from any cover. He crouched a little, like he was ready for action.
No need to pull that gun, stranger. I mean you no harm.
The gray-bearded man grinned. The trapper led a mule loaded with game traps and cured beaver skins.
Hell of a thing to be caught out in this squall! I don't see many travelers in these parts, mister.
Name's Frank Morgan. I'm looking for Stump Creek and a cabin north of here in a box canyon.
Well, what in tarnation would you want with the old robber's roost? You want to dodge from the law someplace?
Nope. Leastways not around here. A gang of cutthroats led by a Jasper named Ned Pine took my 18-year-old son hostage. I aim to get my boy back.
There ain't one man tough enough to get that job done, Morgan. I know all about Pine and his hoodlums. They'll kill a man for sneezing if he gets too close to him. Maybe you ought to rethink what you're planning to do before it gets you killed. There could be as many as a dozen of them.
I'll think on it long and hard, mister. But I'd be obliged if you point me in the direction of Stump Creek and that hideout.
Now keep moving northwest. You'll hit the creek in about 10 miles and turn due north and follow the creek into the canyon where Stump Creek has its headwaters.
I'm grateful. Names don't mean all that much out here, but you can give me your handle if you're so inclined.
A tin pan is what I go by. Spent years panning these streams looking for color, never found so much as a single nugget. but there's plenty of beaver pelts to be had.
Appreciate the information, Tin Pan. I won't make it to the creek until it's nearly dark. If you're in mind to share a little coffee and fatback with the stranger, you can look for my fire.
Well, now, I might just do that, Morgan. Gets mighty lonely out on these slopes. Besides, I'm plumb out of coffee. Been out for near a month now. But I got a wild turkey and we can split on the flames tonight. And turkey and fatback sounds mighty good. If it comes with coffee.
You'll be welcome at my fire, Tin Pan. I'm headed west and north until I hit the creek. I'll have a pot of coffee on by the time you get there leading that mule.
Now, I can cover more ground than most folks figure. Mule's got more gumption than a horse when the weather gets bad like this. I'll be there, and pretty close behind you, unless you get a shot at a good fat deer. Take me half an hour to gut him and skin him proper.
Tin Pan had a Sharps booted to the pack saddle on his mule. There was something confident about the way the old man carried himself.
Venison goes good with coffee.
Frank gazed into the snowstorm.
I may have to find a spot sheltered by trees to throw up my canvas lean-to. I don't want them to know I'm coming.
Not in this snow. The cabin you talk about is miles up the creek anyhow. Only a damn fool would be out in a storm like this. I reckon that makes both of us damn fools, don't it?
Hard to argue against it. I'll find that creek and get a fire and coffee going. It's gonna be pitch dark in an hour or two. I need to find the right spot to hide my horses and gear from prying eyes.
You won't have no problems tonight, Morgan. But if it stops snowing before sunrise, you'll have more than a passing troubles when the sun comes up. Man on a horse sticks out like a sore thumb in this country after it snows if the sun's shining. That's when you'll have to be mighty damn careful.
See you in a couple hours.
Frank urged his horse forward.
Just thinking about a cup of hot coffee and frying pan full of fatback got my belly grumbling.
I'll be there. I sure hope you got a lump of sugar to go with that coffee.
Bag full of brown sugar.
Hoo-hoo, damn! If I ain't got lucky today!
Frank rode out of sight into a stand of pines at the bottom of a steep slope. He rode directly into the snowfall, his hands and face numbed by the cold. The outlaw's trail would be gone soon, with so much snow falling. Frank now had no choice but to rely on the information Bowers and the mountain man gave him, and hope for the best.